I was thinking that the last few weeks of my talks here got a little bit abstract, perhaps, or lofty. And so it's always good to go back to basics. And so I thought today could be a back to basics day. And the basics that I want to explore is breath, breathing. And to give you a sense, perhaps, of how meaningful the breath could be, I'd like to say a few things and do a little exercise with you. There was a man who came to be ordained at the monastery, and he was very idealistic and very scholarly and showed a great promise as a practitioner. But then he seemed to get bogged down in the monastery's library. And whenever anybody looked for him, he was always in the library in the books. Great big fat books on Buddhist philosophy and psychology and all of it. And finally, the abbot just was beside himself with frustration when this monk, who was just always looking in books. So the abbot finally locked the library. And the monk was quite flustered. Went to the abbot, "What's going on?" And the abbot said, "There's only one book you need to study. Only one book you need to rely on. And that's the book of your own breathing. Study your breath and everything else will be revealed to you." Isn't that pretty neat? It's not a traditional story. I just made it up. However, the Buddha said, this is what he made up, "O monks, mindfulness of breathing, when developed and repeatedly practiced, is of great fruit, of great benefit. Mindfulness of breathing, when developed and repeatedly practiced, perfects the four foundations of mindfulness." The four foundations of mindfulness, developed and repeatedly practiced, perfect the seven factors of awakening. The seven factors of awakening, developed and repeatedly practiced, perfect clear vision and liberation. So it begins with the breath. And it's not uncommon for Buddhist teachers to say that everything you need to learn in Buddhism can be discovered through the breath. You take breath from all the way to enlightenment. When I was in Japan, a Zen teacher insisted that mindfulness of the breathing, meditation of the breath, could lead a person to liberation. Now, for the uninitiated, the breath can seem very boring and dull and perplexing. Why in the world would such a grand, lofty religion like Buddhism, which has libraries filled with wonderfully profound books, why would it encourage you to focus on the breath as if the breath is the most important thing you can, or one of the most important things you can pay attention to, or the path can unfold when you engage with the breathing? And there's probably many, many answers to that question, but I'd like to offer a few, two primary ideas today about some of the value of the breath meditation. One is that if you think of awareness or attention as being a precious resource, if you think of awareness as being perhaps food, it matters where that food, what that food is fed to. So if you spend your days thinking about the latest and greatest electronic gadget that you can buy, and that's all you ever think about, then you're feeding a certain kind of obsession. You're feeding a certain kind of mindset, a certain kind of orientation. If you're always thinking about sex, you're feeding a certain orientation. If your awareness is always going into fear, anxiety, you're actually feeding the anxiety with this food of awareness, of attention. Where we place our attention is consequential. And so in Buddhist practice, there is some emphasis on choosing where you put your attention So you take this wonderful food and you feed it in places where it's useful to feed, to have some choice about what you do with it. And there's a whole wide range of choices you have of healthy places to put it compared to the unhealthy places that people often commonly will put it. So the breath is one of those places. You can pour the food of awareness into the breathing. Why is it that's a healthy place to put your attention? One of the reasons is that the breath is healthier than most of the alternatives. The way that the untrained mind goes about its business often is not so healthy. Buddhism would say that the untrained mind, the person who kind of never encountered any kind of attempt to develop themselves, is suffering from addiction. And we're all addicts. And we can have, you know, IMC is really Thinkers Anonymous. You know. So probably, you know, some of you this evening realize that you've come to the right place. I'm Gil. I'm a recovering thinker. You know, there's another one, yeah. Let's have some testimonials here. Don't do it. Don't do it. And some of us can't even afford even one thought because it just leads to another. But you know, seriously, there's a way in which the mind has a certain addictive, obsessive quality to it. We're kind of you know, it's very hard sometimes to get off the train of our thinking, and because we can't get off of it, the food of our attention goes in there and often fueling that process. Sometimes it's relatively innocent. Sometimes it's literally deadly, the kind of way what we're feeding with our attention, the kind of preoccupations, concerns of the mind. You know, sometimes we can get lost in anger, and people can get kind of spin out of control with their anger, just thinking about it. I'm amazed how I could be sitting peacefully, minding my own business and meditating. Nothing changed as far as I can tell in the immediate outer world that I'm paying attention to. And my emotions can do a whole somersault inside of me. You know, nothing's happened. And, you know, I create this whole universe of thoughts and ideas and images and memories and stuff. And then I react and respond to it. And so sometimes you can really get out of hand, that whole inner mental world. So when we bring the attention to the breath and focus on the breath, we're actually putting the attention in a different place where the normal obsessions are. And we stop feeding the obsessions. And we put the attention someplace else. And one of the reasons why focusing on the breath can be calming is because we stop feeding the usual preoccupations of the mind. And if it's not fed, it'll quiet down or atrophy or kind of fall away after a while. And sometimes I've done mindfulness of my thinking. It's very interesting to do that. And it's often, because at some point for me, it settles down after a while. But I find that if I want my thoughts to settle out, a quicker and more effective way to do it is not to focus on my thinking, but rather to ignore them and just focus on the breath. And the more I can pour my attention on the breath, kind of fill my experience with the breath, kind of fill the attention with just breathing, so breathing becomes the whole universe, there's very little space in the mind left to think, or there's very little fuel or food left in the mind to think. And then my mind settles down, becomes quite spacious and expansive, and it's quite a wonderful thing. So one of the functions of the breath is to pull us away from the usual tracks the mind is going on, which are maybe not so helpful, and place us on a different track so something different can happen. Another way of saying this, perhaps, which is maybe a little bit nicer way of saying it, is the breath helps us to get out of our own way. You know, too many cooks in the kitchen spoil the soup. Too many minds in your mind spoil the soup as well. And if you... So you get out of your own way. Because what that means is that Everything that bothers us is there because we're fueling it. We're feeding it. It's not everything that bothers us. If we think, because, you know, if we're bothered by the traffic signs, the noise out here, traffic noise is not going to go away, right? But the being bothered is fueled by how we relate to that traffic sound. Our suffering, our frustrations, our inner mental problems can be traced to a particular way which we use our mind, not to the external world. And so if we can learn how to get out of the way and not keep fueling the unhealthy patterns in the unhealthy patterns in the mind will actually unravel themselves. We don't have to fix them. We don't have to solve them. We don't have to understand even what they're all about sometimes. It's enough just to kind of get out of their way and things will just fall away. So, having said all that, let's try it. And let's do an exercise around breath, breathing. And then afterwards you can tell us a little bit what your experience was like. So gently close your eyes. Take a moment here, take a few moments to feel your body. Feel your body against the floor, your chair, cushion. And if possible, see if you can get a three-dimensional sense of your body, global sense of your body, rising up out of the chair or your cushion. And if possible, see if you can establish an inner sense of ease with your body, being at ease with your body. A little soft, easy. With a global experience of your body, feeling your front of your body, the back of your body, the sides. Take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And feel what happens to your body, the stretching, expanding as you breathe in deeply. And feel what it's like to exhale, the contraction of the body. Breathe in deeply and feel it in all directions, front and back and sideways. And slowly let your attention, let your breath return to normal. And with a normal breath, or approximately a normal breath, where is it you feel the breathing in your body? Where is it clearest? What parts of your body are activated as you breathe? Someone who's going to explore a cave in the dark would put their hands up and maybe feel their way along the walls, feeling and sensing their way. In the same way, maybe with your attention, feel your way inside your bodies, if the body's a cave. And kind of feel all the different places that get activated as you breathe. The rib cage expands and contracts. The diaphragm moves, the belly lifts and falls, the shoulders lift and fall. The back rib cage, the sides of the rib cage move. There might be subtle movements in your spine corresponding with your breathing. In what part of your body is the breathing most pronounced? In the chest, or the belly, the diaphragm, or perhaps in your nose, your nostrils, as the air goes in and out? See if you can set yourself at ease. Be easy with how you are. And explore your breathing. And notice how the experience of breathing in is a different experience than breathing out. Notice how they're different. is you feel the difference between the inhalations and exhalation. Is one of them longer than the other, or are they of equal length? Does your breathing seem labored, or is it easy? Is it light or heavy? Fast or slow? Is your breathing pleasant or unpleasant? In a moment, I'll say start, and then after a minute, I'll say stop. And in that minute, you count and see how many times you breathe, how many inhalations you take in a minute. Go ahead and start. And stop. And continue a little bit longer with your breathing here. And now, see if you can make small adjustments in the way you're breathing. See if you can make breathing be more enjoyable, more pleasant. Maybe by breathing in different parts of your body, breathing a little bit more fully, maybe by letting go more fully as you exhale. It doesn't have to be dramatic. See if you can let yourself enjoy or find it pleasant to breathe. Notice what's happening in your mind. Notice if you have any thoughts or attitudes or feelings. Maybe that are making it difficult to be with your breathing. Maybe not. Notice what's going on in your mind. And if you can, each time you exhale, see if the exhale can somehow settle the mind, quiet it, soothe it, empty it. Each time you exhale, you're emptying the mind of its concerns and thoughts. The awareness which knows your breathing has no location. The awareness that knows your breathing has no boundaries to it. The awareness which knows your breathing has no movement in it. So then you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths to end this meditation. Feel your body. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So from the experience of that meditation, guided meditation, what would some of you say is the value of focusing on the breath? And if you had an unpleasant time, if that was difficult for you or unpleasant, I'd like to suggest there's value there too. So what's the value, what kind of value could you see or could you intuit or experience by that kind of focus on the breath? What was the beginning?
Lessening.
There was a lessening of the onslaught of thought.
Yes,
So what I was saying earlier, if you kind of take the food and feed it into your breath, there's not much food left for your thinking. Someone else? Yeah, here.
For me, it's like knowing where that zero point is, so with, and being able to
experience that zero point and know what that feels like So then when you start moving away from zero or from center, you start to be more aware of what's going on with the rest
mm-hmm.
of your mind.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Great. So a zero point, or even just the breath itself, trying to hold the focus on the breath, can even if you're unsuccessful at it, can really highlight what's going on in the mind, to teach you a lot about the mind. And this is something I think I like to emphasize a lot, is that if you try to do a breath meditation, it works even when it doesn't work. Because if it doesn't work because you can't stay with the breath, just the attempt to try to stay with it shows you how out of control your mind is. Shows you how fast the mind is moving. Shows it what's going on in the mind. And it's quite easy to kind of go through life and kind of be invisible what we're really thinking, or what's the momentum of the mind really is, how churned up is it or something. But if you try to keep the mind still, you'll see, oh, I had no idea the mind was that concerned with something, or that busy, or that agitated, or something.
That is actually a question. I'm curious what the Theravada tradition thinks about using pranayama exercises to help you, like when either the mind is just too unruly and you can't really stay on the breath for long periods of time.
Right.
Or you're too tense. Or you're too sluggish. And so I know that there are exercises that can help you break that enough so that the rate of coming back to the breath is actually not bad.
Right. So the question is, what does the Theravada tradition say about using different breathing exercises to help you as kind of antidotes or help in different kinds of situations, right? And it really depends on the Theravada teacher, the Buddhist teacher. Some teachers are kind of purists, and you're not supposed to do anything except just be diligently mindful and let things be, and just kind of practice a kind of letting be kind of mode. And just keeping mindful and explore it that way, be present that way, and so some teachers have a whole big repertoire of skillful means that they're ready to teach you. So you find a range, and so for example, Tanisara Bhikkhu, who comes here sometimes, he has a whole bunch of things in his toolkit, things he'll tell you to do with your breath. If you're really tired, one thing you can do is kind of emphasize the in-breath, or have your breath, what he calls the breath energy, go upwelling, kind of go up in your body. If you're really agitated, you have the breath energy kind of go down into your legs, into your feet, and settle it. So there, and then the teachers I practiced with in Burma, they didn't want us to do any tinkering or any kind of adjusting at all. They just wanted us to be impeccably present for what was there. And if it was hard to be present because the mind was agitated, then we just had to do our very best to try to be present for that. And they felt it was very valuable just to do that. And some of their attitude was that if you're trying to bring an antidote in, you're actually trying to change what is there. You're trying to, rather than be present for what is, you're trying to change what is. And so you find a range. And But generally, what you don't find in Theravada Buddhism is you don't find a big emphasis on pranayama or breath exercises, any kind of breath exercises, kind of intentional breathing in some intentional way, unless occasionally it's for a particular antidote for a particular state. But like in yoga, sometimes you go to yoga studios and they take classes in pranayama, and it's not there for a particular antidote. It's a good exercise for their tradition. So I'm not familiar in Theravada Buddhism of people kind of doing, just doing exercises like that, unless it's an antidote. Okay. Someone else want to bring something up? Maybe the last one for the evening? Yes? Yeah.
What I notice is as the mind starts to quiet, subconscious images start to surface. An image from a dream or a childhood experience or something like that. In this case, those were positive images. I can see that they could just easily be not positive, but I'm wondering what the proper approach is to dealing with, as the mind quiets more and more, do these subconscious images also stop popping up, or what is the, if there's a proper approach to dealing with them?
I think the when you ask a question like that, what's the proper, what's proper, you have to first decide what's the aim, what's the purpose, because proper doesn't make any sense unless you have a purpose or have an aim or direction you're going, purpose you're trying to fulfill. So it depends what your purpose is, what you're trying to do in meditation. Traditionally in Vipassana practice, the emphasis would be don't do anything with those images. They certainly can arise, and sometimes in deep states of meditation, very interesting creative images can bubble up. But don't do anything with them, but rather just know that they're there. Just have this very clear awareness, seeing is happening. Other times, there might be other reasons why you actually want to take up the images and really get into them. So, for example, if a recurring image appears that's frightening, a recurring image which bothers you, keeps coming up over and over again, or you feel like you're blocked in some way in your spiritual growth, then it might be interesting to actually get into the image and try to get to the symbols of it or the feelings of it, or really kind of explore what's going on in some deeper way. In our tradition, the Vipassana tradition, there's a particular instructions that are given for dreams. The dreams are a little bit like that, right? So people will often ask, what should I do with my dreams? There's a lot of interesting things you can do with dreams. But if what you're doing is, if your purpose and what you're trying to do is only do a Vipassana practice, which sometimes that's on a retreat, that's what you want to do, because that's what you set yourself to do, just to do that. Then the Vipassana way of dealing with dreams is, if they're a really powerful dream wakes you up, or you wake up and you remember something, it really has an impact in the dream, it really seems significant. Then just sit up in your bed and meditate in your bed. And don't meditate on the image, on the content of the dream, but rather meditate on the emotional tone that's been left over from having the dream. So if it's a nightmare, you might feel fear. If you feel, if you had some wonderful, if you won the lottery, then you would feel the joy. And so you kind of go into the emotional tone that might be lingering from having that dream, and use that as the entryway to go into something, because then you're staying with what's present, you're not analyzing, but you can go quite far that way. If you go into the symbolism of it, the meaning of it, you may or may not, find what's interesting. But if you stay with what's happening and with the emotions and the body, the body is always accurate. The body is not interpretation. The emotions are not, in and of themselves, are not interpretation. So if you go in through the body and through the emotions around the dream, it can sometimes go very deep very quickly. So I don't know if that was helpful, but so the breath is, since the time of the Buddha in Buddhism, is considered one of the primary meditation practices. And I was introduced to it through the Zen tradition, which arose many centuries after the Buddha. And as I've more and more studied Buddhism, and I found that it's just kind of prevalent all through all the different forms of Buddhism I've studied, the breath has really been a tremendous emphasis. And I find the more I've practiced, I've been doing the breath meditation now for over 30 years. And rather than getting bored with it after all that time, because, how many times can you go down the same street? I actually find it to be more and more interesting the more I do it. And a lot of that interest at some point is not the breath per se, not the breathing per se, but rather it's the mind states that get cultivated and arise and develop, state of the mind that unfolds in relationship to staying with the breath. So at some point, you go into the breath and enter the breath. And then at some point it opens up again to a bigger world, that the breath itself opens up to a bigger world. bigger world in the body, the bigger world in the emotional life, and also a bigger world in the mind, until the mind itself becomes, as you're staying with the breath, the mind itself becomes a very fascinating and very enjoyable field of study or area of development. And the mind itself, at some point, begins to lose, maybe we don't lose our boundaries, but the mind itself, the awareness itself, loses its boundaries, loses its location, loses its agitation, loses its suffering. And that's nice. So I hope that this worked as a little cheerleading rally. Stay with your breath. So, thank you.